Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to this week's episode of What the Health Just Happened, where we talk about all things healthcare, community, business, and life. The goods, the bads, the ups, the downs, the lefts, the rights, and everything in between. We're so fortunate to bring on a variety of guests way smarter than we are to share some healthy versus not healthy advice in their respective industries and about their ride on this wave called life. Today, we got a friend of ours, right? Would you consider him a friend?
Definitely a friend.
Strategic partner. You've known him for a long time, so he's been a strategic partner of our show's sponsors, 212 Benefits. He also happens to be an expert in all things workers' comp, Gainesville, and the University of Florida. Is that accurate?
I would say yes.
You know everything about Gainesville and the University of Florida.
Yes.
So simultaneously an agent and owner, or just like, what do you want, owner or agent?
Let's go both.
Okay, both. Yeah. Whatever sounds cooler.
Sure.
Workers' comp specialist. That's the name of the business. Keon Ostevar or Ostevar?
Take your pick.
How does your dad say it?
Ostevar.
How do you say it?
Ostevar.
How does that happen?
It's a long story. For whatever reason, the first 40 years of my life, he always pronounced it as Ostevar. And then the last 10 years, he's decided to change the pronunciation on me. So it's kind of a running joke.
Curveball.
He and I, yeah.
Where's the name from?
It's Middle Eastern, Persian.
Okay. Yeah. Is dad...
Dad's Persian. My mom is Canadian. So get my height from my mom and other characteristics from my dad.
Like what? What characteristics?
I'd say, we're on a podcast, but amount of melanin in my skin, as far as I tan pretty easily. So
he's tan. Tall and tan.
Your dad's like 7'4", right?
Actually, no. He's only, now he's down to 5'10". He used to be, 5'11". My mom's...
You did say the height from your mom's side.
Correct. Yeah. My mom's got seven brothers and sisters. The, average height of the brother is probably 6'4", 6'5". So that's where the height comes from.
Sorry, Ross boys. My kids are doomed from the start. The name changed too. Did dad go overseas and hear it pronounced a different way? Like what, just one day, 10 years ago, he says, I'm gonna change my last name.
He just threw me a curveball, like you said. And, it's just a back and forth at this point. And he has no recollection of ever pronouncing it the other way, which makes it even more funny. So
one day he woke up and he said, I'm going to mess with Kian.
Pretty much. Pretty much.
Kian or Keon. There we go.
Right. No, it's,
we'll do a lot. Keon. That'll be healthy or not healthy name, pronouncing your name. We're going to talk a lot about workers' comp. At least you are. I'm not, because I know on a scale of 1 to 10, 0, is that on the scale?
Yes. I'd say -5 for you.
I wouldn't say -5. I've had experiences with it at the fire department. I could share stories that I have and how we had to file paperwork, which I think is relevant. So workers' comp for 30-plus years?
Agency has been around for 33 years. I joined as a partner agent back in 2005, so coming up on 19 years myself.
Okay. Before that, you got some cool stories. What was your first job out of college?
So actually...
was it out of college or in college?
In college. In college during the summers. I worked with a publishing company. We did direct sales during the summertime, a company called Southwestern Publishing, based in Nashville, Tennessee. And the summer internship for college students was selling educational books door to door during the summertime.
So in college,
correct,
in Gainesville,
yes.
Well, you're going door to door.
No, the way the program was set up was it's typically students from University of Florida would go up north for the summertime. So anywhere between states of Iowa, Ohio, I've been to Missouri, I've been to Vermont, and you're basically there for 13 weeks, along with about anywhere between 40 to 60 other students from your respective college. And typically 2 to 3 students live together. And we have an organization that goes out and markets these books to families in their homes. So yeah, I did that from basically 5 summers as an undergrad at University of Florida.
That's great experience, I think, for a college age student. You get the door slammed in your face?
Definitely.
Do you get cursed at?
I had definite situations where there were some choice words thrown my way. Absolutely.
Did you sell a lot of books?
I did. I was fortunate enough to just through kind of dumb luck and hard work to do pretty well. Not so much my first summer. It was my second summer and beyond. I kind of figured things out. I became a sales manager with them, worked with them for another 4 years after college as a recruiting district sales manager. So I was in charge of students at University of Florida, Florida State, and recruited teams to go out and work in that summer program.
So any young listeners who don't know, a book, it's, you have pages, you turn them, you read left to right, top to bottom, but you actually hold a copy of it. You don't listen to someone else.
Can we do a role play right now? Can you try to sell me a book?
Save that. That could be entertaining, but that's relevant. Those are important skills for a college student to learn. So I want to hear about it. What did you learn that you still apply today.
For sure, for sure. Now, I mean, the you know, power of persistence, you know, they taught us to do anywhere between 25 and 30 presentations a day. We're putting in 13 and a half hours of work. So you're getting to your first house by, you know, 8 a.m. and you're working until 9, 9:30 p.m. at night. Take a few breaks throughout the day, but other than that, you're on your own. So, you know, learning that independence, learning that persistence, emotional roller coaster that is, you know, going door to door in the, you know, whether it's modern day or in the mid 1990s when I was doing it, there's a lot of skills that you are able to ingrain in yourself from all that experience.
What's harder, working in insurance or selling door to door books?
Wow, they're both have their challenges. You know, the door to door books is probably a little more difficult just because you're young and you know, have an experience on your side. But I'm thankful that I did it and it was able to help me pay my way through school, graduate debt free, and you know, it was
That's awesome.
Good experience.
Trey's ready.
Hold on, let me see that mic.
I love when they
chime
in.
So you were able to do that and get through college. What kind of money were you making then?
You know, the top
mind you, this
students,
is the 30s or 40s, right?
Sure. Yeah. When the color TV was not a thing yet. Sorry. No. You know, my top summer, I think I made just over $30,000 in a summertime.
In a summer?
Dang.
So, you know, it's one of those situations where the opportunity is there if you're willing to, you know, work hard and put in the time, effort, and energy.
There may be a lot of things that you learn, but just from me knowing that you did that, knowing how you work today, he's so persistent in stopping in places and just dropping in, asking for somebody and leaving his card. I have to imagine that's from your time selling books.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, it's a lot of it's just that repetitive, you know, keep persisting, keep, you know, going back and hopefully you can catch somebody on a good time or a good day and can make a sale.
I think I love advice on sales, how it applies to life, but like you can't take anything personal either, right? If somebody slams the door,
sure.
Go ahead.
Sure. No, I mean, that's a huge part of it is it's not personal and you don't know what situation you're walking up to when you go to somebody's house. You know, the kid could have just, you know, blown up the microwave. They could have just had an argument with their spouse. They could have been laid off 3 days ago from their job and they take it out on you because you're the, you know, easy victim. So yeah, a lot of it's just kind of compartmentalizing and saying, look, it's nothing personal. I just need to go to the next house and see what I can find there.
Did you hit every single house? Did you ever skip a house?
No, you're definitely targeting, you know, families, and this may sound a little strange in this modern day and age, but you're targeting folks with typically school age children, kindergarten up through about
educational
high school. Educational books, correct. So it's a lot different now. They still have students that sell these summer, their modern summers, but it's kind of a different approach than what we had back then. This is pre-internet, pre-ring doorbells and all the other stuff, pre-social media. It was a little bit easier.
Yep.
All right, talking money, did you have the ability to fluctuate prices so that you kind of were like, hey, here's what we need to make bottom line, but you as the individual gets to choose what you maybe try to target sell that person?
You know, not really. We pretty much stuck by the book when it came to the prices that the company published.
That's a good pun there.
Yeah, just stuck by the book. Just because you may have one of your roommates is over in the next county selling there, and if they find out from somebody they talk to that they got a different price for the books, then it can be created kind of an awkward situation.
Yeah, nice question, sleazeball. That was Trey, by the way. He's a shady sales guy over there. I'm kidding.
Do we need to go talk to your other customers that you record for?
No.
Okay, before we get, like, I do want to dive deep into workers' comp.
Sure.
I think that's relevant. We're going to, especially for business owners, business leaders, there's certain things I think you have to have as a business. You could not have it, but you're pretty liable if you don't.
Sure.
Before that, should we talk some Gator football real quick?
Of course.
Ride or die Gator fan, right?
Absolutely.
Born and raised in Gainesville?
Not born and raised, but been there since 1993, with the exception of 1 year. We actually lived here in Jacksonville. Then we moved back in 2005.
So did you move there to go to college or you moved there prior to college?
Nope. Went there from Sarasota, grew up in Sarasota, and then started college at UF.
And then never left?
For the most part, yeah. 29 plus years, yeah.
How much has Gainesville changed in 29 years?
Quite a bit, yeah. I mean, it's a totally different area around campus. There's just a ton of new developments and student housing and everything else that, you know, has changed the town for a lot, but in some ways, or a lot of ways, it's good because it's, you know, helped the economy and helped a lot of businesses, you know, grow and thrive.
Your business, where are you covering organizations? So supporting them in workers' comp, what areas?
Yeah, I mean, I've got clients stretch from Gainesville up to Lake City, over here to Jacksonville, down to Leesburg, Tampa, Sarasota. Yeah, so we don't really have a set area or territory. If you're a Florida-based business and you have, you know, need for workers' comp assistance, whether it be problems with claims, not being able to secure coverage, we're there to help.
Okay. We're going to go back to Gainesville and Florida State because I said we have two Seminoles in here and two Gators in here. So I think we definitely should talk trash, but we'll hold that.
No, we can talk trash.
You want to start already?
Yeah, why not?
No, we'll save that. I'm just curious. So
you guys don't have a quarterback this year.
Who's your quarterback this year?
We got two quarterbacks.
Congratulations. I use ChatGPT for some of these questions because I don't even know where to look. The number one thing is like mod, mm-hmm. which, by the way, I didn't know what mod stood for. What is do you know what mod is?
I have no idea.
This is what I got. Experienced modification factor. Mm-hmm. Is that accurate?
Mm-hmm. What does mod stand for?
It's short for modification. Yeah.
Got it.
So you mentioned the history of the company. It's been around 30-plus years. You've been there 19 years?
19 years, a few months.
Okay, yeah. So what kind of clients, organizations, people are you working with? Your company, who are you working with? Who's a good client for you guys?
Sure. Yeah, no, we work with a ton of, I call them small to medium-sized businesses, anywhere between 10 employees and 150 to 200. Industry-wise, you could look at contractors, air conditioning, electrical, plumbing, concrete. We do quite a few of those. Manufacturing companies, retail businesses. We've got a pretty wide range of clients that we work with.
Would you say more blue collar than white collar? Which is always an interesting term, by the way.
For sure. No, yeah, I'd say blue and gray collar, as they say.
Gray collar,
kind of
that's
light
it.
Manufacturing, I guess they call that kind of gray collar. But yeah, that's probably majority of our clientele.
And I like this question because I'm just curious. What are some common misconceptions businesses have about workers' comp insurance?
In Florida, workers' comp is kind of unique in that comparing it to your property insurance or liability or auto insurance, where you can go out and get, have a broker get you four or five different quotes from four or five different companies for those different lines of insurance. All of them, are going to have different premiums because they're all going to work off of different rates. Workers' comp's a little bit of the exception in that from a commercial lines standpoint, all the carriers work off of the same base rates, and it's tied to what they call classification code for the employee. So a certain classification code for the job duty, it could be an electrical technician, it could be a mechanic at a car dealership. They all have a class code assigned to them and then a rate that's assigned to that class code. So
CEO of electrician company is a different code than electrician that's out in the field.
Yeah.
Okay.
Typically the CEO is going to be somebody in the office or maybe does some visits with clients. That's going to be a much lower exposure than somebody that's out wiring buildings and crawling through attics and that sort of thing.
Okay. So every business that hears this, all one or two of you that happen to listen to this show, we like to make fun of who actually listens. We don't know. Who needs workers' comp for their business?
Sure. If you're a construction-based business and you have one or more employees, besides the owner-officer of the company, then by law in Florida, you're supposed to carry workers' comp. If you're a non-construction-based business, then you're looking at typically four or more employees, and then you're required to carry the coverage by law.
So every company, construction, one or more people, mm-hmm. you better find someone like Keon for workers' comp. Mm-hmm. Non-construction, four or more employees?
Correct.
Look at this, guys. I'm a workers' comp wizard already. this is a good question, too. I'm just curious. How can a business reduce its workers' comp premiums without compromising employee safety?
Good question. Yeah, so going back
to the... There's no chance you came up with that by yourself.
Yeah, that is ChatGPT.
For sure. Going back to the point I was talking about with the rates, because the rates are set, one of the biggest misconceptions that the business owners have about this line of insurance is doesn't really matter who you buy it from, whether it's an agency that sells all lines of insurance or an agency that maybe sells just one line of insurance like us. And that's probably, like I said, the biggest misconception for most business owners. Even though everybody starts with the same rate per $100 of payroll, that class code and rate, as I mentioned before, there are cost drivers that end up impacting the bottom line premium that the business is going to pay for their coverage. The experience mod or experience mod factor is a big one. That's a cost driver. That's a calculation or a formula behind that number that a lot of times can have mistakes or errors in it. There's credits and discounts that are available as well. So those things can kind of help you bring the net cost of the insurance down as opposed to just relying on, the rates are the rates.
Yeah, I love when I could tell when Trey's ready to ask a question over there out of his face.
Okay. Water or air what would be more expensive to insure in this particular? So, like, if you did a
air,
like, I mean, like, up in, like, if you were on planes and stuff versus working on the water. I'm sorry, I didn't phrase. I'm like an idiot. I didn't phrase that correctly, but yes,
hey, yeah. We love dumbing it down here.
Sure,
okay.
No, but like working on boats, like insuring boats versus maybe planes,
for sure.
Yeah. What gets more expensive?
For sure. So, there's
great question, by the way. Now that we understand,
it took me like 5 minutes.
Yeah, that's fair. Believe it or not, it's going to be the water exposure, boats exposure. There's actually a separate federal part of workers' compensation, not to get into it, but it's a specific federal law that says if you work on navigable waters, whether you're on bridges, docks, or boats, there's a certain type of coverage that you have to have, and that can be fairly expensive when it comes to workers' compensation. So, yeah.
What about, like, again, I love the water, fishing mm-hmm. in general. If you're a fishing charter captain, you have right. 4 or 5 employees. Yeah. What's that? Do you have to carry workers' comp for a first mate? That might
yeah. There's again, it's a federal law. There's different what they call Jones Act coverage. Not to get too much into the weeds, but it's just a different animal when it comes to the water exposure and the boating exposure, when as opposed to the majority of your run of the mill businesses that are going to be electrical, you know, on the land type, you know, exposures.
Okay, I'm gonna.
I have a question.
Go ahead.
So historically, in our business, obviously insurance rates have always gone up.
Mm-hmm.
In the workers' comp world, have they gone up or down over time?
Yeah, sure. So they've gone down pretty significantly over the last, I guess we're talking 18 years. There was some, more than that, I'm sorry. It was in 2003 that there was some pretty sweeping legislation that was passed in Tallahassee when it came to workers' comp reform. It was something that needed to be done, because the work comp rates were getting out of control. The classic example is a roofer. If you were a roofing contractor in 2002, 2003, and you wanted to provide workers' compensation for your employees, the rate was close to $50 for every $100 of payroll that you paid out. Almost 50% of that was the workers' compensation cost. Yeah, so it was extremely cost prohibitive to be a roofing contractor and have workers' comp coverage.
How do you pay the bills and keep the lights on?
Sure. Yeah, it was like I said, the system needed reform. So they passed some pretty big certain bill that really reformed workers' comp. Just to give you an idea of what's gone on with the roofing rate, it's now down to, you know, less than, I think it's $9 per hundred, you know, here in 2024. So historically, in the last 18, 20 years, it's come down. Rates, few years have gone up, but most of the time they've gone down. You know, we're talking a net decrease of 65-70+% since then because of that.
So the complete opposite of employee benefits and health insurance?
Pretty much.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
I got a kind of semi-silly question here, then a serious one. What's the weirdest excuse you've ever heard from an employee filing a workers' comp claim? Or a couple, like, how? What kind of crazy things do you hear?
Yeah, no, we've had some doozies, you know, over the years. Gosh, you know, take your pick. I mean, I've had folks, you know, something as simple as, you know, a paper cut that, you know, they want to turn into workers' comp and try to get, you know, compensation for, you know, we've had, you know, questionable, you know, accidents where there are no witnesses. You know, somebody claims, well, they thought there was no witnesses, but then there was actually video surveillance and you can see somebody literally, you know, falling down almost in slow motion on purpose and then calling out to help, you know, somebody come help me. But then they look back at the video and they're like, you didn't truly fall. You kind of kneeled down and then laid down
and then screamed.
And that was your injury. So yeah, there's some interesting folks out there for sure.
How does a business owner, like I worked in home healthcare mm-hmm. for a while. Sure. There's a lot of workers' comp claims and some gray areas. You can actually see if someone's applied for workers' comp in previous agencies.
Mm-hmm.
And this is home healthcare.
Yeah.
And you can see someone that, like, they filed for workers' comp for 7 consecutive companies.
Sure.
How does a business protect that? Like, it's not you versus the employee, yeah. But sometimes it's like, this is not a legitimate workers' comp situation.
No, that's one of the biggest challenges is who you're trying to, you know, you're hiring. I think they say 90% of all workers' comp claims, you know, are bad hires, you know, when it comes down to it. So, to be able to kind of weed that out, there are some different services that can find, like you just mentioned, kind of historical workers' comp claims, history checks, if you will. You know, we just had a conversation with a company last week that's developed kind of a pre-hire questionnaire for employees to help kind of judge their moral compass or their work ethic. And one of the things, they look at 5 different things, everything from dishonesty to, you know, their you know, court, their amount of safety, kind of their safety mindset. They look at things like, you know, I mentioned dishonesty, employee theft, all these different factors that are designed to kind of help weed out those folks at the pre-hire level so that you don't get those 20% of employees that cause 80% of your headaches.
Again, this show, we say healthcare, community, business, and life. I think if you own, operate a business, or you're an executive with an organization, like workers' comp matters.
Mm-hmm.
Is it shiny and exciting? And, you know, we're not wearing diamond necklaces right now, but sure. this stuff matters. Before I ask the next serious question, we go to commercial break. First game of the year, Miami versus Florida. What's your call?
Gators. Big.
Gators big?
Gators big.
Wow. How big?
What's Mr. Ostevar's opinion on this subject?
That's probably a different conversation. No, I think Gators by two touchdowns. I think we're gonna put some people on notice.
Championship.
Let me tell you what my least favorite team in all of sports is, the Miami Hurricanes, so I'm cool with that. Last serious question here before the commercial break. We've got about 3 minutes left. What are the potential long-term impacts on a business if it fails to properly manage its workers' compensation claims?
Sure. It boils down to, we'll go back to that experience mod factor that we talked about. That number is a, you know, annual calculation that every business has that pays a certain amount of premium. So if a company is not, you know, doing a good job either with their employee safety program or after they have claims, if they're not doing a good job managing those claims, but experience mod factor can end up, you know, increasing their net cost of their workers' comp premium anywhere between 30, 40, 50, sometimes over 100%. Compared to their industry competitors. So,
how much time we got left?
2.5 minutes.
Okay. We love shout outs. I'll go first. Hi, Mom. Love you. Shout out to Mom over time. Any shout outs to anybody?
I think I'm good.
We mentioned your dad a few times, by the way. Okay. So, prediction on the Miami Florida game. What's the prediction on the Florida Florida State game?
It's going to be an interesting game, especially in Tallahassee this year. So, you know, we've got a brutal schedule. The Gators have a brutal schedule, especially the second half of the season. So how healthy we are going to that game is probably going to determine how that plays out for us.
Top three favorite Gators of all time. That's tough.
Well, you got to go, you know, Tim Tebow, number one. That would be the easy answer.
That's a slam dunk.
From that standpoint. You got to go Steve Spurrier, number two. He did it as both a player, you know, and a... as a coach, obviously national championship winning coach in 1996. Third, let's go Percy Harvin, because I named my dog Percy because of Percy Harvin. So yeah,
who you got? I know you're number one.
Fred Taylor's number one.
Number two,
probably Tebow, and then probably Jacquez Green, number three.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
Quezzy.
There's a lot of studs that came out of UF, man. It really is.
Yeah.
And I hate losing to them when we do. Yeah, Ken, thanks for joining. That's the first half so far. What am I missing? We got some good stuff the second half. Healthy or not healthy. Work comp specialist. That's the name of the business.
Correct.
And I want to make sure, what's Ostevar? Both of them. Dad says it one way, you say the other.
Take your pick.
Ken, that's what the hell just happened. All right, welcome back to the second half of What the Health Just Happened. If you missed the first half here, you're catching us on the radio. Good news is you can find the full episode on your favorite podcast platform under What the Health Just Happened. First half, man, we really kind of geeked out on workers' comp here. At least you did. You're kind of a nerd in this space, aren't you?
You could say that.
That's a compliment, by the way.
Sure.
Ken Ostevar, depending on how you ask and who pronounces his last name, agent and owner of Work Comp Specialist. Specialties include workers' compensation coverage, loss-sensitive plans, experience mod factors, and return of premium programs. I pulled that from LinkedIn. Was that accurate?
That's accurate.
We talked some workers' comp stuff. I think this is really relevant to any business owner or business leader. Again, you can catch the first half on your favorite podcast. Healthy or not healthy is my favorite part of the show.
Okay.
I don't care if anyone likes it or not. We love it. Hopefully one day you text us randomly, healthy or not healthy. Healthy or not healthy, I asked this already. The Florida Gators football schedule. Florida Gators football schedule the next two seasons.
I'm gonna go healthy, just because you know, you come to the University of Florida if you want to play top competition. This is an opportunity to, you know, make your mark, and you know, gone are the days of playing the Little Sisters of the Poor and some of these other directional schools for four or five of your games each season. And yeah, we've got what they're calling is perhaps the toughest schedule in the history of college football. So this will be a make or break year.
I am not a Gator fan. But more than Miami, everything I'm seeing is the most difficult 2 year schedule today. It could change.
Sure. Good news. I don't know what the last five are: Georgia, LSU, Ole Miss, Florida Texas, State. Florida State. Yeah. I don't know what order they are, but those are our last
next
five
year's
games.
Even worse. Okay, mm-hmm. Healthy or not healthy? Selling books door to door in college.
Healthy. Built some good qualities and characteristics, and made a little money while I was doing it.
Is it pronounced GIF or GIF?
I'm going to go with GIF.
I say GIF. We've got to say, okay, healthy or not healthy, sending memes and GIFs to your friends and partners.
I would say healthy. Yeah.
100%.
Got to bring some levity to the stale insurance world that we operate.
What do you
in.
Use to put Joey's face in those GIFs, too? That's a great
all kinds
app.
Of, all kinds of apps that are available.
I love it. Modern he technology. Sends Joey the best ones. Healthy or not healthy, Java burrito.
Definitely healthy. By far one of the best burrito places, locations in Savannah and Hilton Head. So
that's a freak fan for them.
Big fan.
Healthy or not healthy, ordering an extra menu item from Java Burrito to take home with you after you've had a meal.
Absolutely healthy, for sure. Yeah, especially when you live 4 hours from the closest location.
One day Gainesville will get one, maybe Jacksonville. Okay, healthy or not healthy, PEOs managing workers' comp risk.
You know, in certain situations, employee leasing / PEOs can be healthy. For certain companies, they're a good fit. Not for everybody, but it's a case-by-case basis, and we try to find what is going to be the best fit for any business that we're working with.
I think that's similar to employee benefits, right? Some companies, it may make sense to have your health insurance through a PEO. Mm-hmm. Other times, it don't. I love the term niches get riches, and it's not about getting rich, but like if you niche down and work on something specifically. You are an expert in workers' comp. Mm-hmm. Joey Jansen is an expert in employee benefits. I don't want to knock PEOs. Joey, you want me to knock them or
no?
Okay. I'm saying I think they make sense for some companies. Otherwise, they don't. Okay. So this is a funny question that ChatGPT gave me. You got any more healthy or not healthies?
No, healthy or not healthy. I have a question, but you go first.
You go first. Mine's ridiculous.
So a PEO can manage a work comp risk, right? Mm-hmm. What happens if they don't want to go to a PEO and they get kicked off work comp coverage? Where do they go?
So the state of Florida has what's called a Florida Work Comp Joint Underwriting Association, which is basically a pool of businesses that for whatever reason could not get coverage through a standard insurance carrier for workers' comp and either didn't want to go to a PEO or their history of claims is so bad, no PEO wanted them. So it's essentially the option of last resort that by law has to offer coverage to a business if they're in Florida and they need workers' comp because they meet those two qualifications we talked about earlier as far as employee size. So that's their salvation.
Typically, how much more expensive is that than a standard carrier?
Anywhere between 75 to 150% more cost. So it's...
How do you get out of that? Obviously, better claims.
For sure. You typically need to have...
a management program. Can you show it to a standard carrier?
For sure. Yeah, at least maybe 1 to 2 years of better claims experience is going to give you enough of a track record to be able to find a standard carrier to get you out of that particular association.
Is there such a term called consent to bind or bind to consent?
Sure. It's consent to rate.
Consent to rate.
Consent to rate. Very close. CTR. Surcharge is probably.
Not to be confused with CTE, right?
No.
Okay. CTR. That's
football. Yeah. No, CTR. A lot of times we just call it a surcharge. It's essentially an additional charge that the state of Florida allows a business, allows a work comp carrier to add to those rates that we talked about before. So, a business may have challenging claims history and an underwriter for a carrier looks at it and says, if we collect only the premium that the state allows us to collect, we don't think you're going to be a profitable account for us. So we're going to surcharge you or add additional rate on top of the rate that the state says we can charge. So that can equal an additional 20, 30, 40, 50% more. But it prevents them from having to go to that JUA and also can prevent them from having to go to a PEO if they don't want to go that route. So
I'm going to plug you again. Keon Ostevar, his work comp specialist. If you have any work comp questions, I would highly recommend going to you and your organization. You said 10 to 150, 10 to 200?
Typically. Yeah, that's our sweet spot.
He is a wizard in workers' comp. Again, it's not glamorous. It's not a marketing team or putting out commercials, but it matters. Mm-hmm. Can be very... expensive to an organization. So I just like the more eyeballs and ears we can drive your way. Another ChatGPT question here. I kind of like, what steps should a business take immediately after an employee is injured on the job?
Sure. So one of the most basic things is making sure that they there's an investigation done. It doesn't have to be anything super fancy. It can just be a one-page form that they're writing down kind of what were the circumstances around the claim or the accident, were there any witnesses, you know, if the injured worker is available to give their, you know, side of the story, if they haven't been taken to a walk-in clinic or in a hospital emergency room, just to try to document and get as many details as possible, you know, as soon as possible after the accident or the injury. And then, of course, you know, reporting that particular claim to the insurance carrier. By law in the state of Florida, a business has 7 days from when they're made aware of a claim or an accident to then report that claim to the insurance carrier.
What happens if injury occurs today, mm-hmm. and then 8 days later, worker comes and says, I was injured eight days ago?
Yeah. At that point, you're still better off reporting it to the carrier. I recommend that business check with the employee's supervisor and say, hey, this employee is claiming that 8 days ago they got hurt on the job. Did he bring anything to, or she bring any of this to your attention? And just include that as part of the accident investigation. The actual, you know, the carrier itself is going to intake the claim and still pay the claim. It's just a matter of, you know, best case scenario, you're trying to report it as soon as your knowledge of that particular accident takes place. But you do have up to 7 days to report it.
How often, this is such a broad question, there's no way to answer it specifically, but like, how often are employees delaying reporting that? Let me give you a specific example. So when I worked at the fire department, I stepped off the back of an ambulance weird, my knee buckled.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, man, I don't want to say anything because I don't want to go through the process, but I did. I was like, hey, I just buckled my knee. So I had to go through all this paperwork, all this stuff. And there was a point I'm like, I ended up being fine, but I almost wish I would have delayed reporting that.
Mm-hmm.
So does that happen often?
Yeah, it does. It does. And what we typically recommend is you still try to encourage employees to, you know, report the claim to their supervisor or somebody, you know, at a management level. If it does happen, there is a specific form that we a lot of times will recommend that the employer have the employee fill out, where it's basically almost like a medical treatment declination form. So they're acknowledging that they were injured on the job, but they're choosing not to seek treatment under workers' comp at this time. And that, what that does is basically kind of holds, you know, almost like a placeholder of that, of you as the employer having knowledge of that claim. So you're putting that on file. And so then 3 days from now, 3 weeks from now, they come back and say, hey, I want to get treated under workers' comp. You've at least got that particular form on file that kind
of starts. Okay, so same scenario. Mm-hmm. Buckled my knee coming off the back of the ambulance. This was 12 years ago, 11 years ago.
Sure.
My knee hurts all the time. Can I go after him?
If you're with the same employer, you can try.
I'm not like this is kind of a joke, but serious, right?
By law, I mentioned before, employers have 7 days from their knowledge of the accident to report it to the insurance carrier. Believe it or not, employees have 30 days from the time of the accident to report it to their employer. So a lot of times, if you're talking months between the time that the accident supposedly occurred, and now they're just telling their supervisor about it 60 days later, we see all the time insurance carriers will deny the claim for late reporting if it's past that 30 days. So it's kind of a case-by-case basis.
Does that reflect on the employer or employee?
It's more on the employee, just because if you're the employer, how are you supposed to know if somebody got hurt if they don't bring it to your attention? So yeah, in those cases, again, we just encourage our clients to say, look, you know, just encourage your employees. This is the process. If you get hurt, bring it to your supervisor. We'll make a determination at that point if it needs to be filed or not as a claim.
That's kind of the pivot I was going to. So as an mm-hmm. employer, it goes back in a agent, broker, consultant, I'm not sure the term you use, but it's education on the front end, right? Customer service. So how important is that education on the front end so that someone's not coming 60, 90, 120 days later?
Right. Sure. No, it's huge. I mean, it makes a big difference. The other component to that is if a business happens to be a drug-free workplace, in the state of Florida, you can get an additional credit or discount off of your workers' comp premium if you're willing to have a written drug-free workplace policy in place and then do pre-hire testing as well as post-accident drug testing.
Yep.
So the sooner you have knowledge of that incident, the sooner you can get that person drug screened as far as the timing of it in relation to when the accident occurred or injury occurred. That's just going to help your case in the grand scheme of things.
This is a weird one. So the state of Florida, medical marijuana, if it's a drug-free workplace, but they have a medical marijuana card, what does that look like?
Sure. Yeah, it's a big hot button topic right now for employers. When they made marijuana legal with a prescription several years ago, they left language in that particular bill that talked about, or the statute that talked about, because marijuana is still illegal at the federal level, you as an employer in the state of Florida still have the right to maintain a drug-free workplace and choose to not necessarily, you know, recognize marijuana, you know, as a legal substance. So what I tell employers is there's an addendum that you can add to your drug-free workplace policy, both for applicants that come through the door, as well as current employees that may get a medical marijuana card after they're hired or on board with you, that specifically talks about, look, we understand marijuana is legal in the state of Florida. However, if you're an applicant coming to work for us, even if you have a medical marijuana card, we're still going to have you take the drug screen, because depending on how much THC is in their prescription, they may or may not, you know, pass that test or fail that test. And if they fail, then you as the employer can choose not to hire them at that point.
Any thoughts on if or when marijuana, weed, what do you call Mary Jane? I don't even know. I feel like an old guy now. When it's recreational.
Yeah.
Right. No, then what is that? What is that up?
That's a whole nother, you know, can of worms. You know, other states that have made it recreational have that challenge. You know, I still think there's going to be some protections built in for employers to be able to say, you know, kind of like alcohol, you can't show up to work, you know, with a crack and a beer and walking around and drinking. So why should they allow somebody to marijuana.
That's good. You got something to add to that before? Because I want to talk about this.
Just real quick, the most common claim, is it falling?
Slips, trips, and falls are probably, you know, one of the top three or four, you know, strains, lifting, those types of things are really huge as well. Yeah, soft tissue.
You guys have seen the movie Friday, right?
Yeah, of course.
Have you seen that movie? Immediately, the story you were telling of someone in the store, like, my back, my neck, and my back. Like, it's immediately where my mind went. That guy,
right.
I'm going to sue you for $150,000. We sell for $20.
Correct. That's this. We like to laugh at her. That's what I envisioned.
Sure. My neck, my back.
Okay. How tall are you?
6'4".
Do you run?
Not well.
Do you cite, like, what do you do? He's not to get weird here. Like, you're in good shape.
Yeah. No, I've got a garage gym at the house. So, you know, do a lot of different stuff at the house, from rowing to exercise bike to those types of things.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is it 29029? How do you pronounce that? Like, how do you, this event, which I've seen many years, and if you do it again, I'm coming with.
Okay.
Or at least meet you there. We don't have to travel together.
Cheer me on. 29029everesting.com, I think, is the website. It's an endurance event. I found out about it through a friend of mine who did it 2 years ago. Essentially, they give you 36 hours to, you know, typically they're done at like a ski resort. So you've got a trail or a mountain that you're essentially hiking up for 36 hours and taking the gondola back down. And
over and over and over.
Over and over
again. So up, gondola down. Up, gondola down.
Yeah. And depending on which mountain it is, will depend on the amount of trips you have to go. But the goal is to accumulate an elevation gain of 29,029 feet, which is the same height as Mount Everest. So the thought process being, you can climb Mount Everest or the equivalent of without having to travel halfway around the world and potentially, you know, have all the health complications that come with
it. Die.
That's a health complication.
You don't need a Sherpa to walk up there.
Don't need a Sherpa. No. So, no, it's a wonderful program, wonderful company. My wife and I did it in Whistler, Canada last year. We trained together. They give you a 20-week training program, and it was a lot of fun.
Will you do it again?
I think at some point, yes, I probably will. It was just the challenge of it was, it took us 35 and a half hours to complete.
Hey,
so
we got in under the wire. That's a fist bump right there. Don't leave me hanging.
So no, it was by far the most physically taxing thing we've done, ever for both of us. But at the same time, it was a sense of accomplishment. Both of our teenage daughters were there to witness us do it. So that was a lot of fun.
That's actually was my next question. What's the most physically demanding thing you've done in your life?
Absolutely. Was that, was
that's
that
it? Yeah. Not debatable. I mean, what about the most mentally taxing thing you've ever done in your life?
Selling books door to door.
Well, that could be better.
That would be emotionally. Yeah. Yeah. That was probably the most difficult thing. Yeah.
And then working in workers' comp, what's the most difficult thing that you have to deal with on a day-to-day basis, monthly, weekly?
Sure. A lot of it's just kind of changing folks, business owners or people in decision-making capacities, kind of educating them and changing their mindset on the whole, you know, if the rates are the same from company to company, what does it matter if I choose you to do workers' comp or if I choose Joey or somebody else to do my workers' comp? So it's just a more of an education thing from that standpoint.
I love Joey. I would not choose Joey to do our workers' comp, by the way. That's why we immediately call. You got a question? I thought you just raised your hand.
Okay.
So what is the difference? What would you answer to that? Hey, listen,
sure.
Keon, we have workers' comp with someone else. The price is the same. Why would I pick you?
For sure. Yeah. So it really boils down to knowledge and service. You know, when it comes to service, everybody promises service. You don't really know until you try. You know, the knowledge aspect of it, I think, is where we separate ourselves. You know, I use the medical analogy quite often when I'm meeting with a business owner. You know, if you twist your knee, you know, you can go to your general practitioner and he can try to diagnose what's going on with your knee, but you're probably better off going to an orthopedist and somebody that can see, you know, really what's truly the issue and get the proper tests done, get the proper diagnosis done and get you back on the road to recovery. So
what does service look like? This is for a business owner throughout the year. So they like, Keon, you're my guy. That's it. After they switch to you and pick you, what does service look like the next 365 days?
Yeah. So I'm a big believer in just really simple things when it comes to servicing a business, something as simple as returning emails. You know, it seems like a very basic part of any service relationship, being there if they have an issue, responding in a timely fashion. All the other stuff that we do, whether it be reviewing the experience mod worksheets for errors, making sure they're with a good carrier, helping them with managing claims, all of those things are kind of part and parcel. But I think if you surveyed 25, 30 of my clients and said, hey, what's the reason that you choose to do business with Keon and we're comp specialists? I think a lot of them would just simply say, he does what he says he's going to do. He's there when we need him. And that's
blocking
kind of
and tackling.
Blocking and tackling.
Speaking of blocking, what were those two Gator players that blocked each other? What were their names?
Yeah, I think those guys are no longer on the team. So
thankfully.
Okay. We have so many bloopers
you guys do that too?
Now. A couple couch guys like, oh, look at these idiots. And we can't. Yeah, right. Do you remember the show Pros versus Average Joes?
Yeah.
I loved that show.
Yeah.
I think it'd be funny to have, an average person. Okay. Workers' comp related, not that serious. If workers' comp were a movie, would it be a drama, a comedy, or a thriller?
Probably a combination of all three.
Who would be the lead? Who would be the lead actor in it?
Oh gosh, Steve Carell, maybe. Yeah, so he'd be a great.
That would be a great sitcom, actually. Following workers' claims
there
stories.
There actually was a sitcom a while ago. I think it was only streaming that was specifically about workers' comp.
Really?
Yeah, it was a company in like a Sarasota-based sitcom. I heard about it. I'm not sure.
I mean, it lasted very long, but. Oh man.
Yeah.
This is the ChatGPT ones. You don't have to answer this. If workers' comp had to explain itself in a meme, what would that meme look like?
Wow.
Give them 5 minutes.
Yeah, think about it. Something to think about in the next couple of days. We're going to start sending memes.
There you go.
Joke, man. You make some hysterical stuff. You clearly have a great sense of humor, I think, just based off of everything that Joey tells me.
Yeah.
And also kind of I can say badass, too.
I think so.
Yeah. Workers' comp badass. Yeah. You and I aren't doing that Everest climb. It would take me a long time to try.
I would not finish it.
We're doing it next year, Chad. I'm signing you up.
No.
This is a verbal contract. He's going to say no.
You missed the part when you said that you would go with him. He said you could come cheer him on. So he actually doesn't believe that you can physically do it.
I 100% can do that. 100% I will do that. If challenge accepted.
Put the time and effort in the training. Yeah, anybody can do it. Except Joey.
Anyway. I love it. A couple minutes here left. Any big things in the workers' comp world that's upcoming? Again, that's a lot to unpack. This is a 10-hour conversation trying to jam it 48 minutes. But
yeah, I mean, it's we talked about the rates going down historically. I would not be surprised if they decrease again. The new rates come out every January for that calendar year. So we're probably looking at another small decrease, 5-7% in 2025. A lot of that, we didn't talk about why the rates have gone down so much, but a lot of it is employers have gotten much safer in their workplace habits. They've understood, a lot of them understand the importance of managing their claims when they do happen. The attorneys aren't quite as motivated to take on work comp, cases as they used to be. So all these different factors have really helped kind of drive the cost down.
You said attorneys and trays just chomping at the bit. Mm. Ambulance chasing lawyers. I'm kidding. We work with plenty of them, by the way.
No, actually, I wanted to ask, you talked about claims going down. Does that have to do with work from home? And how does a work from home claim work?
Yeah, no, that's a good question. There's a separate classification code for folks that we call them telecommuters. That's the old term before it became work from home. It's about the cheapest rate per $100 that you can get. So those claims aren't very significant. I think it's 11 cents for every $100 of payroll is what somebody who works from home exclusively. That's how much the rate is for workers' comp. So we don't typically see a lot of claims there, but they are potentially covered. And it's a matter of making sure that if you are a business owner and you have folks that work from home, that your broker and your carrier are aware of that. So that A, the proper class code can be on the policy. And then B, you know, their home address, believe it or not, becomes a work site address. And you want to have that on the policy as well.
Man, again, of course, we run out of time. But you'd mentioned roofers were $50 for every $100 of payroll. What's the average? So $100 of payroll, that sounds like a common number. What do you think the average across all industries is?
If you broke it down, let's say like your artisan trade contractors, plumbing, electrical, HVAC, you know, they're probably in that $3 to $4 range per hundred, you know, probably closer to $3 nowadays. You know, restaurants, you know, that rate is down to, you know, a dollar and change, which restaurant rates used to be, you know, about $7 per hundred if you were a server in a restaurant. So that rate has come down tremendously. So yeah, I mean, it's one of the situations where yes, the rates have gone down, but at the same time, payrolls continue to go up. Minimum wage continues to go up. So that cost is, you know, it's a calculation. It's payroll times the rate in hundreds. That's where your work comp premium number comes from. So with raises, with competitive nature of business these days and having to increase pay in order to get good talent on board, you know, work comp expense is still a significant line item.
Look, I had fun. This is not bells and whistles. There's no fireworks in here.
No.
But this is important for any business owner, business leader. Look, I would say overall badass as a human, but definitely a badass in the workers' comp world.
Thank you. I have a healthy or not healthy to round us out if I could.
Yeah. You better fire it out.
Healthy or not healthy, the development of the new Jaguar Stadium in Jacksonville, Florida.
Healthy.
All right.
That'll be a great place for Florida, Georgia for future years.
There you go. Yeah. Look, any questions, workers' comp, you can reach out to us here at 212 Benefits. What the hell just happened? But go directly to Keon. Work comp specialist. You're based in Gainesville, cover the entire state of Florida. I'm not kidding. This guy is a wizard in all things workers' comp, which really matters if you are a business owner or business leader. Keon, thank you for joining us. That's what the hell just happened.